Definitely.
Sorry, Brandon. Sorry about that. Go ahead, please.
Okay, thank you. As Marlene just pointed out, the federal government has a history of targeting immigrants and ethnic minorities, including Japanese Americans. And similarly, the JTTFs, which were created in the late 1990s, have historically targeted Muslims, social activist groups, as Malcolm pointed out earlier, and more recently, African Americans protesting for civil rights. I myself was personally wrongfully arrested in 2004 in connection with the Madrid, Spain bombing. I and my family were targeted by the Portland police working with the JTTF in 2004. They followed me, they gathered information about me when I came and went to a local area mosque, even though they had no evidence that I had committed any crime. And all of the reasons used in support of my false arrest were tied to my Muslim associations. The fact that I was, I went to a local area mosque, I advertised in a Muslim Yellow Pages, my wife was Muslim, Egyptian, surname Muhammad. So the threat to Americans by political or social activist groups like BLM or Muslims has always been virtually non-existent in terms of statistics. And for example, on average since 1995, 50 Americans are killed in terrorist attacks worldwide. And at the same time, since 2016, 2/3 of the fatal attacks have been perpetrated by white supremacists and extremist militias. I believe the city, you know, the state that are not focusing on where the real threat is and to Portlanders and Oregonians, it's not Al-Qaeda or ISIS, it's drugs, gun violence, rise in white extremists. However, even the rise in the white extremist attacks and deaths does not justify compromising our civil liberties. And for that reason, I advocate again, as I have in the past, for withdrawing completely from the JTTF, even in a case-by-case basis, or at a minimum, I think this is important, to add language to the existing resolution to ensure and allow participation on a case-by-case basis only where such investigation directly relates to criminal activity, which would make it more in keeping with ORS 181A250 and the mandates of the Fourth Amendment. So again, thank you for the opportunity to allow me to share some of my concerns. And thank you to the council members and police commissioner.
Next up, we have Mariana Garcia Medina.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. My name is Mariana Garcia Medina, and I'm the Senior Policy Associate with the ACLU of Oregon. We appreciate the Mayor's Office decision last week to have the report amended with more information from the Portland Police Bureau. The new amended report has more of the information community members have asked for, including more details about the demographics of those involved, the nature of the cases referred to the task force. This is a step towards transparency. However, the ACLU continues to have concern about the city's relationship with the JTTF. The FBI has a long history of civil rights abuses, including surveillance of lawful First Amendment activity. They have surveilled and interrogated peaceful political activists and protesters, inappropriately justifying those actions by characterizing lawful public protests as potential domestic terrorism. Time and time again, the FBI has used invasive and unconstitutional surveillance tactics in the name of counterterrorism and national security. Just last week in the New York Times, it was published a story about the FBI's purchase of a powerful spyware that is capable of reliably cracking the encrypted communications of iPhone and Android smartphones, another two of unconstitutional surveillance. This kind of surveillance operations harm community trust, disproportionately impacting historical disenfranchised community, including BIPOC and Muslim communities, as well as chill and punish protected political speech. Another concern we continue to have is Portland Police Bureau potential conflict with ORS 181A250, which is the law that prevents the PPB from collecting or maintaining information about political, religious, and social views and the association or activities of any individual as a way to protect civil liberties and privacy of Oregonians. The FBI does not operate under this law or under any comparable law or policy, and PPB officers working at the JTTF JPTD officers may be engaged in actions that are in direct conflict with ORS 181-8250. The most direct way to prevent civil rights abuses and potential state law violations is for the city to prohibit PPB from participating with the JPTTF. However, to the extent that the PPBB continues to have engagement with the JTTTF, it is critical for the city to create meaningful oversight and transparency. To do this, the city needs to continue requiring the PPB to provide consistent and timely reports with meaningful information about its activities with the JTTTF. As well, the city should create a community-focused oversight structure for PPB's participation in the JTTTF. Otherwise, without an oversight and transparency structure, the safeguards of ORS 181-8250 and the civil rights protections of all Portlanders may be at risk. Thank you very much.
Next up, we have Seemab Husseini, Randolph Splitter, and Dan Handelman.
Greetings, everybody. Would I be able to ask for 3.5 minutes? Pretty please.
Mayor?
So the answer is, I'm sorry, no. We have to give everybody the same amount of time. I
appreciate it.
Apologize for that.
No worries.
You go ahead and jump in.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I'm going to read now. Greetings and assalamu alaikum, Mayor and respected commissioners. My name is Seemab Husseini, co-founder and vice chair of the Oregon chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE Oregon for short. This report is hot propaganda garbage. The cases referred back and forth between the two agencies makes me question, is the FBI full on and just completely JTTF now? Because I don't see the delineation here as easily. There's nothing about investigating racially motivated violence of white supremacists and groups that sympathize with their ideologies who love the city. August 22nd is a great example. Sam Adams, mayor's office directed far right to heavily BIPOC Park Rose neighborhood where massive violence erupted. And here in downtown, a man I witnessed, motivated by that day's far right with racist intentions and political motive, brandished a weapon and fired it and was released the same evening on own recognizance. Also, according to this report, 2021 nationally had no terrorist attacks because terrorists are following COVID protocols. I don't know what was J6 then, because I swear that involved political motives. This report cites a maybe as the Atlanta spa shooter, Robert Aaron Long, as the lone lethal attack, as considered possibly terroristic. But it totally was. On May 11th, the Atlanta spa shooter received a 19-count indictment on charges including hate crimes and domestic terrorism. This, as someone who's also been out there in the streets during the protests, we were also able to witness a person like Garrick Fernbaugh, who's still out there. There's a kill list of Portland progressives, community leaders, and elected officials. Hello, Commissioner Hardesty. That are still out there. Anything? The depressing number of mass shootings this report downplays is not related to terrorism. Almost 700 mass shootings last year, according to the Gun Violence Archive, over 700 of them dead. But let's talk about the JTTF and the jihadist boogeymen in Portland. An imam forced to renounce his citizenship and leave the country. A store owner threatened that if he didn't sign up to be an informant on his Black Muslim community, he'd be maintained on no-fly lists. Portland businessman over a 100-day ordeal of imprisonment and torture in foreign Black sites on his way back to this country because he didn't choose to become an informant for his Portland Muslim community. A kid who was set up with a dummy bomb by the JTTF and is now in prison because his dad worried very early on and called the FBI. And they said, no case for him, as they built one over time. The diverse and uncertain threats this report states the city faces is junk science and very bad propaganda to maintain racist and xenophobic constructs in law enforcement, as we know. Constructs that have hurt my community as intended. So we ask you to read this report clearly for what it is. It's unbelievable that something like this is written and looked at as, yeah, this makes sense. Especially when this report ends with, finally, members of the community may be the first line of defense. We were and still are, and the city has given free rein to the far right. and you let the feds attack us, Mr. Mayor. Let me remind everyone about the much talked about law enforcement training slides and the furious DOJ case against the city and the police and the mayor's own words. Let them hurt a little bit. That's what it was. This is not an adequate report and it's incomplete. Thank you.
Next up, we have Randolph Splitter.
Okay, can you hear me, everyone? Yes, all right, thank you. First of all, I do want to thank the commissioners, the mayor, and the police commissioner and the police sergeant, all for your public service. We know that these are challenging, difficult jobs, and we do appreciate your public service, even though we may not always agree with you. But thank you for all your work. My name is Randolph Splitter. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Portland chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace, a Jewish but also interfaith and multicultural human rights organization, which focuses on equal rights for Palestinians. JVP-PDX continues to oppose the Portland Police Bureau's cooperation with the Joint Terrorism Task Force because of the JTTF's long history in the aftermath of 9/11 in targeting people based on their religious and political beliefs and their country of origin. These actions contributed significantly to Islamophobia and anti-Arab racism. The role of the Federal Bureau of Investigation in running the JTTF is particularly troubling given its even longer history of violating the civil rights and civil liberties of the American people, especially Black people, Japanese Americans, and other people of color. The Bureau's reported infiltration of Black Lives Matter protests in Portland in 2021 is just the most recent example of what has been described as the agency's culture of white supremacy. As a Jewish human rights organization, we note that the existence of JTTFs in Virginia and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, did nothing to prevent the Pittsburgh synagogue massacre or attempts by neo-Nazis to intimidate the Jewish and African-American communities in Charlottesville with marches and rallies marked by racist and anti-Semitic slogans. Nor could a JTTF have anticipated the recent actions of an individual who held hostages in a Texas synagogue. The Portland ACLU has expressed concern that the JTTF entangles local police officers in practices that violate state laws protecting Oregonians from being targeted because of their political, religious, and social views. These crucial protections were put into place to safeguard our First Amendment rights. The FBI doesn't have any such prohibitions on surveillance, as their own policies no longer require, quote, reasonable suspicion to engage in intrusive investigations. That the JTTF continues to operate under a veil of secrecy with little oversight is particularly troubling considering its history of civil rights violations. We believe that the values of Portlanders, including the Jewish community, are inconsistent with keeping Portland police in a relationship with the JTTF.
Next up, we have Dan Handelman.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners Hardesty, and new to these hearings, Commissioners Ryan, Maps, and Rubio. I hope you can hear me okay. My name is Dan Handelman. I'm with Peace and Justice Works and our project group Portland Cop Watch. We would like to express deep gratitude for their ability to give oral, contemporaneous testimony on the Joint Terrorism Task Force this year. This is the first time since the new relationship was adopted in 2019 that such testimony has been heard. Despite large turnouts that year to demand the city take its officers out of the FBI's task force. The previous 2 years, our group helped organize alternate events, first with a mock city council hearing featuring empty seats and nameplates for council members in 2020, then last year with a live stream during the online council meeting. This is all part of an effort that goes back to the year 2000 when Portland Cop Watch first found the JTTF on the consent agenda and prompted council to begin raising questions about the FBI's goals. At that time, JTTF was supposed to target for prosecution those individuals or groups who were responsible for right-wing and or left-wing movements as well as acts of the anti-abortion movement and the Animal Liberation Front / Earth Liberation Front. Then Commissioner Charlie Hale, that sounded like something from the Nixon era, and he was not wrong. In 2001, people packed City Hall and the JTTF contract was approved on a 4-1 vote on the fourth hearing. In 2005, former police chief and then Mayor Potter took Portland out of the JTTF due to concerns he could not oversee the officers taking part due to security clearance issues. Predictably, Portland rejoined the JTTF in early 2011, shortly after the FBI coordinated a sting operation against Mohammed Mahmoud, a teenager who the FBI led to believe was going to attack Pioneer Courthouse Square. Starting in 2012, the city required annual reports. Those were heard three times. Once the report barely was accepted due to its threadbare nature on a 3-2 vote. The next year, council had the Bureau go back to fix the report between the 2 weeks meetings before accepting it. We appreciate the new report was held back this year to add much needed details. The original draft only had a few footnotes to indicate the full nature of the cases the Portland Police sent to the FBI. However, even with a longer report, there's no context for why they thought a person who set the police association headquarters on fire needed to be investigated as a terrorist, or for that matter, the person who fired a gun at the federal building, or a person who broke glass on the federal building. While these are indeed criminal acts, they could have been, should have been, and were investigated as such. It's not clear that the PPAD has a clear definition of terrorism. It's also good the original last two pages of the report were pulled out because they speculated about the dangers that may exist after the U.S. pulled its troops out of Afghanistan. That kind of language is unnecessarily alarmist and raises questions about the Criminal Intelligence Unit's objectivity. It's also worth noting the only case the FBI referred to the PPB in 2021 was a non-existent threat to a school, and the case which was deferred from last year's report had to do with a text message threat to a religious leader that was turned over to authorities in Florida, which Sergeant Simpson only just explained why that happened. Just now, it's not in the report. In general, our groups continue to urge the council to keep the Portland Police from working under the JTTF, while cooperation with federal agents would obviously be necessary if a federal criminal act were to occur in Portland. If you do not sever ties more clearly, these reports need to both delve deeper into the crimes being sent between the agencies and ensure there will not be more of the alarmist tone meant to justify continuing the security state that's been on steroids since 9/11 of 2011. We should also fix the part that calls this presentation so the public can continue to testify. And we also had questions about the PPB's cooperation with the State Fusion Center that weren't answered in the report. Thank you very much.
Next up, we have Debbie Kay.
Good morning. Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners Hardesty, Rubio, Maps, and Ryan, thank you very much for the opportunity to address you today. I am Debbie Kay, president of the League of Women Voters of Portland. My pronouns are she and her. The League of Women Voters first commented on the city's involvement with the JTTF in 2001 and has shared our views on the issue with you throughout these ensuing years. We appreciate the opportunity to provide oral testimony on the report once again. Our democracy is strengthened and sustained by active and informed participation in government. Participation can take many forms, from voting to testifying before a decision-making body, such as this one, or joining in a demonstration. The freedom to express one's political views is threatened when people feel they have to look over their shoulders because they fear they may be targets for government surveillance or FBI files. In Oregon, we are fortunate that state law prohibits the collection and maintenance of information related to First Amendment activities unless there are reasonable grounds to suspect that an individual is or may be involved in criminal conduct. On the other hand, FBI actions in Oregon and around the country raise concerns that those protections may be ignored when Portland police work with federal agents. Specific instances in recent years of FBI tracking and surveillance of Muslims and climate change, Palestinian solidarity, and Black activists underscore the reasons for community concern. Furthermore, these revelations can and do have a chilling effect on public involvement, activism, and lawful dissent. In the interest of making Portland a place where community members are free to act without fear, the League encourages the city to end its case-by-case participation with the FBI, and in the future, work with them only when necessary to pursue legitimate criminal actions. Finally, we appreciate the additional information incorporated in the amended JTTF report, and it certainly gives the public a better picture of how the Bureau and the FBI are working together. If Council decides to maintain the status quo, future annual reports should be required at a minimum to contain the same type of information as the amended report, including responses to City Council questions. You will find links to relevant news articles in our written testimony submission. And again, we truly appreciate the opportunity to provide oral testimony this year. Thank you very much.
That completes testimony.
Very good. Thank you to everybody who testified. Colleagues, at this point, we'll entertain any questions that anybody has. Alternatively, I'll entertain a motion to accept the report. Commissioner Ryan.
Yeah, hi, this is a question. Good morning, Mayor. This is a question for Chief LaBelle. You're still in the meeting, right?
I am.
There he is. All right. Good morning, Chief LaBelle. Hey, as the I'm curious about this, and I struggle to see it in ways that I'd like. Has the information from the JTTF shifted focus to the reality that our biggest threat is domestic terrorism?
Yeah, it's really for us based on the referrals we get. And like Sergeant Simpson pointed out, we only got one from them last year. Imagine it's very possible the focus could shift and the cases could be different, depending on what they come across that has a nexus to the city of Portland. But as we know, we've seen a shift in just kind of the focus and the things that are important in the community. And we as an organization are trying to be, you know, responsive to what the community's wishes are around investigating and reporting around the JTTF work.
Thank you, Chief. Sergeant Simpson, do you have anything to add to that? Because it's just so obvious to anyone that that's where the biggest threat is.
Yes, Commissioner, that's a good question. All of the cases that were referred back and forth last year would all fall under the domestic terrorism umbrella. And that is consistent with the past several years and consistent with everything that I've seen in a supervisory role over this this cooperation agreement. You know, because we're not a full partner, we don't get involved generally in cases outside the city of Portland, but you do have Clackamas County, Washington County, and the Port of Portland and the state police are all partners on the JTTF. I would characterize a significant amount of that work would also fall under the domestic terrorism umbrella. Other JTTFs around the country have different issues because of different challenges in their communities. But certainly here in Oregon, you are 100% right that that is, from our lens, the number one concern. And it's reflected in the work that we have done over the past 3 years.
Thank you, Sergeant Simpson. That was helpful. Thanks.
Commissioner Mapps.
Yeah, this is maybe a question for Sergeant Simpson. When I look at the cases that the PPB referred to the FBI, for the most part, they seem to deal with bomb threats and death threats. And I was wondering why those particular cases were sending to the FBI, and if we didn't refer them to the FBI, how else might we handle them?
Sure. With regard to bomb threats, one of the things that falls under the umbrella of the Joint Terrorism Task Force is weapons of mass destruction or explosive related cases. So a bomb threat might not be considered terrorism under the definition, but it falls under the workflow of the JTTF. So in keeping with the spirit and the letter of the resolution, you know, if we are sending a bomb threat case to the FBI, JTTF, we're going to include it here. Certainly there can be some that are both. A bomb threat based on ideology, for example, might fall under the definition of terrorism, or trying to enact change or change government or force government to do things. Other threats, it depends on how they come in and what they're about. Some threats, for example, conveyed person to person generally aren't violating any federal statutes. But if a threat is sent through social media, for example, there are particular federal statutes that apply to those threats. Some cases go to the hate crimes at the FBI, which are not JTTF cases. They investigate separately. So a little bit of is you know, where the cases end up. We want to make sure that we're accurately reporting that to you and tracking it accordingly.
Thank you. And one last question on my part. I think we have 7 cases that we've referred to the FBI. Have any civil liberty issues or concerns been raised about those cases that you know of?
Not to my knowledge. You know, there are some cases that is a question that has to be asked and answered. You know, for example, is a statement protected by the First Amendment, or has it crossed the line into criminal behavior? And that doesn't matter if it's state or federal. We have the same guidelines. All of these cases, at least at the outset, had a reasonable grounds that there had been a crime or a crime was being planned. And that's really where we have to start, you know, start our investigations.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Sergeant Simpson, I'm curious, as I review the cases, is there a criteria under which a threat on social media against an elected official you would automatically send to the Joint Terrorism Task Force?
Yeah, it depends on the nature. So it has to be criminal, first of all. And that there's a lot of things said on social media that as a receiver, you would feel threatened by. But to cross the criminal line, we have to determine, is there a state crime violation or a federal crime violation? And each case is unique. The case that there is one case here. Threat of targeted violence to an elected official was a threat posted on social media to the mayor. That case was referred because it did cross that criminal threshold, but ultimately the case remained with PPB and was indicted by the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office because it was a better venue to pursue the prosecution versus the federal side. So it depends, I guess, is the best way to say it, and how it's delivered.
And where is that decision made? Is that made before you contact the JTTF, or is that a decision that's made in partnership with the JTTF?
The decision to send the case?
The decision to take it seriously and actually do something about it.
I think it depends. Generally, you know, if we take a police report, you know, a police officer takes a report and we review it, we will make that sort of determination, is what's the best venue for this, or does it meet the criteria to go to JTTF, or does it meet the criteria to go to a different agency? For example, a social media threat to the president would not go to JTTF. That would go to the Secret Service for protection. So it starts with us really looking at it, and not every case goes that way. We can investigate those as well. It depends on the nature and what we can figure out about the suspect involved.
One last question. What is different in how Portland Police Bureau engages with the JTTF prior to 2019, February 2019, when we officially voted to pull out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force? I think there are a lot of people who have different understandings of what is allowed and what isn't. And can you succinctly say what was different after we voted to pull out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force?
The main difference is prior to 2019, we had the ability to assign two officers full-time to work at the FBI, sit at a desk, and work with the task force. And I mentioned earlier, the task force is made up of multi-agency. So you have state police, Washington County, Clackamas County, Port of Portland, and the FBI. So you're looking at a much larger investigative area that our officers could be involved with. Now we, through the resolution, we restricted it to threats in or about the city of Portland. And we don't have people assigned there every day. So
actually, I disagree with your assessment of what we did. What we did was pull out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force and set criteria that said the chief or the deputy chief would determine whether or not a Portland police officer would engage with the JTTF. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes. And what I'm explaining is that we don't participate in all those things that I mentioned earlier prior to 2019. We can only, within the parameters of the resolution, work on Portland-based cases, again, that meet all the criteria. So it is a much different landscape for us to work now than it was prior to 2019.
I just want to make sure that that is on the public record, that it is not your decision. It is the chief or the deputy chief that actually is the ultimate decision maker about whether or not we trade information with the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Words are very powerful. So it sounds like the police bureau is actually had evolved rather than actually the council evolved and put very strict criteria under which how we would engage with the Joint Terrorism Task Force. I think that's why I said at the beginning, it's important to put the history in there, because as people retire, the institutional history gets lost, and then the narrative changes, and the narrative actually is not an accurate narrative. And so I just wanna make sure that people keep remembering why we're here, what we did to get here, and what the expectations are. So thank you very much. I really appreciate the conversation. And I appreciate the openness to making this report more useful and more user-friendly for the community who still has concerns about how deeply engaged we are, especially after the summer of 2020 with so many outstanding questions still out there. So I appreciate you being here today. Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. Does that complete questions? And if so, I'll entertain a motion.
May I move we adopt the revised JTTF report as presented?
We have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty. Commissioner Ryan, was that you seconding? Yes. Yes. Commissioner Ryan seconds. Any further discussion? Keelan, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Thank you, Chief Lavelle and Sergeant Simpson, for the presentation today. And I want to really thank the mayor and chief for taking the additional time to amend the reports and to ensure council received the additional information that we requested on behalf of the community. I greatly appreciate that responsiveness. I also want to appreciate the public's concern and their testimonies today. The JTTF relationship has been one that I've followed for many years, predating my time on council, first as a staff to Mayor Tom Potter, and then as executive director of a nonprofit serving immigrant and Latinx communities. And we worked in partnership with civil rights advocates also to both ensure the preservation of civil liberties and also that Black, Indigenous, people of color, and immigrant communities wouldn't be harmed by any joint actions taken under JTTF. And that concern is still in the community today. Portlanders then and now have an expectation of transparency about this initiative. And moving forward, I'm also interested in updating or taking a look at the 2019 council resolution to better reflect today's prevalence of white nationalist terrorism that we've heard about today, and also include the amended information that we've asked for that we know that we want to know on an ongoing basis in order to satisfy the public's interest and to build trust there. I think that taking this additional step will provide the clarity that the Bureau needs in order to respond to us. And accordingly will help ensure that we as a council set up the Bureau for success in this and ensure that council has the information we need to make sound decisions, and also that we ensure transparency and accountability to the public. So in this spirit of collaboration and future work, I vote aye to accept this report.
Ryan.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief Lavelle and Sergeant Simpson. I too really appreciate you being here today and the openness and definitely taking a breath on this and amending the report. And thank you, Mayor, for that amendment to the process, if you will. Colleagues, when this report on Joint Terrorism Task Force was delivered to us a few weeks ago, I thought back to last year's discussions on the same topic. I distinctly remember having conversations with some of you in which you told me that you had requested additional information from the Portland Police Bureau on any potential interactions between the police, Portland Police, and FBI during the 2020 protest. In my remarks last year, I spoke to the troubled history this entity has had with our community and the need for transparency and accountability. I really appreciate the testimony today when there was a theme on this topic. Thank you all for coming. It is for this reason that my staff and I have worked extensively with you and all of your staff to advocate for an amended Joint Terrorism Task Force report that included such information. And I appreciate our conversation that we had last week on this topic, Chief Lavelle. Thank you. And while the amended language doesn't provide the level of detail the community has requested, and for that matter, nor what I'd like, that said, I appreciate that our questions were at least acknowledged and answered in some capacity. I'm grateful to have been able to engage with many of you on this issue over the past week. And at some point, I would love to engage with you all in dialogue about how we can expand the scope of this report. I believe it's in the public interest to get as much information as possible about the workings of law enforcement locally. Such transparency will only serve to build public trust at a time in which we need it most. And we're also at a time when organized crime is more complex and goes well beyond local. So I see the value in coordinated intelligence. It is my hope that we can make changes to this report that will serve these goals. In faith that we keep improving, I vote aye.
Hardesty.
First, let me thank my colleagues, Commissioner Ryan and Commissioner Rubio, for really taking a deep dive into this report and really asking the right questions so that we were given additional time. And I want to thank you, Mayor, for your responsiveness, as well as you, Chief Lavelle, for really being open to hearing about how do we make this better. It is clear that in 2018, when I was running for this seat, I heard from primarily communities of color, immigrant and refugee communities, their fear about how the Joint Terrorism Task Force was using information to target community members. I made it a commitment when I was elected that I would work to pull us out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. And as you notice today, language is really important because we didn't negotiate a deal. We pulled out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force with few exceptions. And those exceptions can only be approved by the chief or the deputy chief. And so I am concerned that the report, it actually kind of implies information that really isn't so. And so I'm looking forward to working with the police bureau to really make this report more reflective of the reasoning behind why we pulled out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. And honestly, this rise in white supremacy and white nationalism that I don't know what police agency actually is leading any changes around that, but it's been woefully underreported. And I know for communities of color, that is the biggest threat we face is of white nationalists and white supremacists terrorizing our community as they did last August. And still, we're waiting for a report about how they were allowed to actually terrorize East Portland last August. So I'm saying all this to say is that I appreciate Chief Lavelle and Deputy Chief Frome's openness to continuing to be better and progress improvements. We have a lot of improvements that we need to make and making sure that the community continues to trust the information that they receive from this report and other reports from the city. So I vote aye, and I look forward to the next report being better than this one.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Thank you, Chief Lavelle. Thank you, Sergeant Simpson. I vote aye. The report is received and accepted. And that concludes our business for this morning. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, everybody who testified.